big book group.
All in all, John.
Hi, everybody. By God's grace, because this program works in my life, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink by any substitute since the day that AA found me, September the 12th, 1957. I'm very grateful to be here this morning. We got one speaker this morning. And any time I start talking about one speaker, it's an old story that some of you have heard, and I tell it about it everywhere I'm allowed to talk. And I think it's very appropriate. Because some years ago, back in our part of the country, they had a state convention, and they had one of these long-winded speakers. And this old boy got up, and he started talking, and he talked on the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and after about 3 hours, he got into the three legacies. And you know, sometimes people get up and leave. And after about 3 hours, some of them began to leave, and they kept going out. And after a while, everybody left except one man sitting on the front row. And he just kept sitting there. And after about 3 hours and a half, the fellow wound up his talk, and he was just dying to get down from the podium and talk to this man and see why he stayed, and he did. And he got down there and got him by the hand and said, "I want to ask you one question." He said, "Everybody left but you. Why did you stay?" He said, "Hell, I'm the next speaker." Well, our next speaker this morning needs no introduction in this part of the country. I know that. And he needs no introduction in my part of the country. I've had the opportunity of knowing this man since 1964. And we shared and cared a lot. I've seen a lot of people in this program. This man has reached out and touched in his life in this program a way of life that we call. And these people are sober and doing something about their life. And it's helped me. You know, I guess the greatest thing that you could say about a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous is that he can help a drunk. And this man has that capacity or that ability to talk to an alcoholic on his level of understanding, guide him and give him direction. Mrs. J.B. Cook, please call Mrs. Cook at Operator 7 in Beaumont, area code 713-832-0207. Room 8. You get that? That ain't my wife, in case you're interested. But burden has played a large part in a lot of people's lives. And I know that there aren't many men around like Burton, the old time. They're not in my part of the country. And these are the people I like to listen to. And it's like Paul said last night, I know this man has devoted his life to the program of AA. And he's trying to do, as our program tells us, be on maximum service to God and the people about him. So at this time, I'd like to give you Burton C. from Kilgore, Texas.
Thank you, Dave, and I certainly want to express my appreciations and gratitude for all of you people being here, and I speak for our group here. You see, this is the first time we've ever had an opportunity to pay back to you in a small way for you making all of these other nice occasions where we can come and enjoy ourselves, and we're so grateful that you're here. And this gratitude, the things here, and so many nice things that come about, and I think one of the another nice things that comes in here is that we got to share with each other many, many experiences and many, many conversations. I'm sorry that I didn't get around to see that so many people here. I wish I could have gotten around and talked to you a little bit more. But I think the Lord's real good to me to just let me be here. And you know, it's not customary to, I don't know why, but it isn't usually customary to have anyone this close to the group that is putting on a conference if they have a speaker within that realm. But I think that this Longview and Gregton group recognize the fact that I had to kind of condition myself so that I could get up here and stand up this morning. And so they were good to me, and they gave me this opportunity that I might spend this hour with you, and I feel like that I'm spending with each one. And then so many other different things that we share together, Gene, the anniversary last night, these little things that comes in, and it kind of brings in our family relationships and our understanding, and we go back. I didn't tell about it last night, because I didn't want to ruin Gene's anniversary. But you know, there's not very many people that knew Gene 42 years ago. That's a long time. But there's I happen to know Gene. We was all raised around here. There's a story goes about Gene and Louise, you know, when they were courting. Money was very scarce, and neither one of them had any, and they worked for their families. And back in those days, why, there was no material compensation that our fathers and mothers gave us for our labor, although we thought we earned it. So they didn't have any money. And so they were, they saw other people going to the picture shows on Saturday night, and they decided they'd get them a job. So it just happened that there was a circus coming to town, and both of them there, they looked in the paper and they saw in there an ad for a lion tamer. And Gene says, well, that's the way I can make a little extra money. So the first thing next morning, Gene went out there, and before he got there, well, Louise was already there. And this man said, well, I wish that I'd love to hire you, but I've already hired this other lady. And so about that time, Louise went into this cage, and here was this this lion that looked just like he's going to jump and eat her up. And all of a sudden, this lion just calmed down, and he went over, you know, and he licked her hand, and he rubbed his head up against her legs and just lay right down at her feet and went to sleep. This man says, now, don't you wish you can do that? He says, you get that damn lion out of there, and I'll show you I can do it. So we're grateful for Gene and them having their anniversary here along with us. You know, there's so many things you can be grateful for. I remind you of that preacher out in West Texas, you know, in his camp meeting, and he'd go out and he'd preach to these this congregation that would gather around there. So one morning, one time out there, well, he decided he'd preach a sermon on gratitude. Well, he preached a sermon on gratitude, and it was customary. Why? When you get a gathering like that, he passed the hat. But when the hat came back, there wasn't a dime in it. Now, there wasn't a bunch of AAs there, so there just wasn't anything back. So he looked down at it, and he said, now, folks, this is what I'm talking about. I'm grateful to get my hat back. So, you see, we can be grateful for it. We can be grateful for everything. My name's Burton. I am an alcoholic, member of Alcoholic Anonymous. Through following this program, and by the grace of God, I have had a drink for 23 years, 1 month, and 20 days today. So here we come, here gathered this morning, as we say in our preamble, alcoholics, non-alcoholics, relatives, friends, loved ones, that we might better acquaint ourselves with the program of Alcoholic Anonymous. And if we're going to talk about the program of Alcoholic Anonymous, we've got to talk about the alcoholic. And if you talk about the alcoholic, you got to talk about the non-alcoholic. You got to talk about the big book. You got to talk about our meetings. You got to talk about the 12 steps, the 12 traditions. And then you've got to talk about a power greater than ourselves that we call God. And then comes that decision within the realm of each individual. What is God's part and what is mine? And then more than anything else, we've got to talk about one of the most important things in the program of AA that we very and seldom ever mention, and that's the telephone. And how vital and important this telephone is. So I'm not going to be the speaker that Dave was talking about and go through a big county fair conversation and make a protracted meeting out of each one of those, but I'll kind of skip over it. And because when we're talking about the alcoholic, we're talking about a very peculiar type of individual. I don't know whether we is born upside down or not, but we do everything backwards. We go to the bed while we're hungry. We go to the table, we're sleepy. We go to the funeral, we want to be the corpse. If we go to the wedding, we want to be the bride. If we ever do anything good, it's the wrong time. And if we ever get caught, it's not our fault. So here you've got a kind of peculiar type of individual. It's like this old boy Helen's joke. This old boy driving down the road, you know, and he had a cop stopped him. He had a bottle in the car, and this cop took his bottle and says, "What's this?" Said, "It's water." He unscrewed the cap and he says, "Man, this is not water, this is wine." He looked up and he says, "Lord, you've done it again." So here we find a very peculiar type of individual when we talk about when we're talking about the alcoholic. Now the only difference between an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic is that we alcoholics know what's the matter with us. And so here we find here two sick people. We find one who is afflicted, and we find one who is affected. And the one who is affected gets just as emotionally sick as the alcoholic gets physically sick. And into the same proportion of which we read from our big book, there is no worldly help. There is no worldly help. So here, I like what Horace Ford said. He said, when a team of horses is going down the road, and one of the horses falls down, and when he is helped back to his feet, then you've got to rearrange the harness on both horses. So here we find a very close coordination between the Al-Anon and the alcoholic, the relationships of which one and each of us follow. So here we talk about here our anniversaries. And I love these anniversaries because we reminisce and we come back to the beginning. And this is a good inventory to start back. There's many, many individuals here this morning that has had that rare privilege of starting or being affiliated with the 1, 2, or 3 that started the group in their hometown. And what a beautiful experience that is. And how it is, I know, with this Longview group here and so many of them here and our little Greaton group and these around here. And I'm so fortunate that I had an opportunity of being associated with AA at that time. But I saw these groups just grow on us. And as we see the group grow, we see the individuals, and the individuals' lives comes into our perspective. And what a beautiful experience this comes in to our lives when we can see. This is home. I think this is the gratification that we get. We talk about our sobriety and the beautiful things that AA gives to us. But when we get our happiness is those things when we see other people happy. So here are these little groups. I know I got my brains out of hot and stayed sober a little bit, and I gave them my job back. I came on over here to Longview, and I was transferred over to Kilgore. And Kilgore, over there were 3 men from Kilgore that was coming over here to Longview to the meetings. And we got over there, and we decided that we wanted to start a little group in our hometown. That we wanted the group for our people. We wanted an opportunity where those who were sick could come and get well. And so we started the little AA group. And back in those days, there didn't anybody believe in us. And we didn't believe any much ourselves. So we didn't know what to do. It was kind of all blind faith. We had no experience as far as sobriety was concerned to look to. My sponsor was 1.5 years old. Al was a little over 2 years. And Horace was not quite 3 years old. And this was the oldest man that we knew anything about in AA back in 1947. So you didn't have too much of success. And everything had to be on blind faith. And so we decided we'd start a group. Let me tell you a little bit about that group and how it started. We didn't have a place to meet, and like I say, nobody would let us meet in their buildings, afraid we might burn it up, you know. So we finally got a little log cabin out there, had some ground, just had ground floor with no window in it, but we had us a Coleman lantern, And so we started a little group, and we started meeting out there. One of the old boys was a manager of a lumber company. And he brought out these nail kegs, and our wives put little cushions on the top and little calico dresses around the nail keg, and that's what we sat on. And we would sit there, and one of us four would be the chairman. And we'd open the big book, and we'd read from the big book, and we would talk and discuss. We didn't, as I say, we didn't talk about our successes. We talked about our failures. We talked about something. What can I take from this big book and put into my life today that I can live today a little bit better? And so here we found ourselves in a closeness that is almost indescribable as far as words were concerned. And we began to grow. And then other people began to come and see us. And finally, the banker took an interest in this old boy that was manager of this lumber company, and he got in conversation with him and asked him about us and asked us where he could meet and where we were meeting. And he told him, he says, well, that hasn't got any windows in it. I said, no. About that time, there was a liquor store that had gone broke over there in Kilgore. And he says, I got a building down here. If y'all will move it, well, you can have it. Well, we didn't have any place to move it. So he just picked up the telephone, called somebody, and he got through, and he said, well, you can move it down here, and he gave us a little piece of land that we could move it on. And so here we had us a building. Well, we didn't know how to get it moved, so we went to the moving, as a moving contractor, and we helped him move three houses so he would move our little building down there. Now, you talk about anonymity. There never was a general that had won a battle that rode home in this victory march with more pride than eight of us alcoholics sitting on top of that building going down the street to Kilgore there, a hollering at everybody. So we had a building. Didn't have any lights, but we had a building, and this was something. You know, it took us about 6 months to find an electrician that wanted to sober up. But we finally found one. And so we had a building, and I went down to the furniture store down there, and I says, I want to buy 12 cane-bottom chairs, and I want to pay you $1 a week. Says, well, who do you want me to charge them to? I said, Alcoholic Anonymous. He said, who's the president? Says, we don't have any president. Says, who's some of the officers? We don't have any officers. Says, who's some of the members? Says, hell, I can't tell you. If they want to tell you, well, that's all right. Just charge it to Alcoholic Anonymous. If we stay sober, you'll get your money. If we get drunk, you'll have to come and get your chair. He says, hell, I don't even know how to spell it. Just bring me $1 a week. So we had some chairs. Now this was a big occasion. This was a tremendous occasion. We had a building, it had windows in it, and now we had some cane bottom chairs to sit by. And our wives came down, and we had a great big celebration. They brought food, and they brought the family, and we started in about 6 o'clock, and I think we said the Lord's Prayer about 11 or 12 o'clock at night. Gratitude and grateful all being close together. So these little groups, how they started in those things, and these old-timers, I don't know why we are classified as those things. There's no particular... I don't think that anyone should be patted on the back because they have stayed sober over an length of period of time. This is available to anyone that worked for it. It wasn't any of us giving it to us. They've just given us the tools to work with. But then there was an awful lot learned back in those little groups. Because somebody had to be good and kind and tolerant and love another individual. So this individual would know how to be good and kind and tolerant when you and I came along. And so these old-timers, as we call them, they back then was 1, 2, and 3 years old. There was 2 or 3. There wasn't very many. But they would come from all around. They would come from Dallas and Fort Worth and all around here. And come around and sit down, and we'd sit at their feet, and we'd listen to them. There wasn't any great intellectual approach to this. We
we would listen, and they'd give us some pearls of wisdom, little quickies, a little mental pictures of which we could grasp. And I know them many times there, and I can always remember when they come around. And they told us, says, be honest and sincere in all of your endeavors and your efforts in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then they told us about how powerful our morning contract was. And says, before you make your contract each morning, push aside all the out of your worldly thoughts and efforts and feelings until you are, then you can say from the very depth of your heart and on the inside the most sincere and the honest explanation that you've ever made when you ask God to sobriety to this day. And says it'll be given to you. And then they told us if our motive was right, and would stand up under the spotlight of Alcoholics Anonymous, it didn't make any difference what the end results might be. And then they told us, never go to bed. Never go to bed if we had an apology to make. Never go to bed if we had an apology to make. They told us about the anonymity of this program. If you ever do anything good and somebody finds it out, it don't count. And then they told about our coordination of and consideration and love for one another. And they said, before you say anything about anybody, ask yourself three questions. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? It might be true, yes. Is it kind? No, it's not kind. Is it necessary? No, it's not necessary. And then they told us never to pray for anything for ourselves alone, unless it would be beneficiary or helpful to someone else. And all of these beautiful things here, which they would give us these little things, and they would give us something that we could put in our lives and go out and grow a little bit that day and come back more than that night and find other little wisdoms here and talk over and how did you get along with that. Then we'd go to these various groups and they'd have these little quickies on the wall. And I love those, and they make good AA talks. And just stand there and just look at them. I know there's one down in Waco that says, if you're going to stop drinking, you got to stop drinking. Well, that's about as good as AA talk. Like over to William was talking last night, this one down in Brownwood down there that had a sign up there. It's not the falling in the water that drowns you, it's the staying there. And I like that. And I like Edwin down, Palestine down there that said, if the water in your well gets polluted, says you don't change pumps, you clean out the well. Now, all of these things here come in real good. And Wayne was talking about they've got one up in Memphis up there. I've had just about all of this fun that I can stand. We've got one in our little room there in the club room in Kilgore, and it says, if you're dissatisfied with AA, all your problems, your grief, and your trouble will gladly be refunded to you at the end of the meeting. So here we find out what we're talking about. So here we're talking about here because, and they told us there is only two treatments for the disease of alcoholism. And this is a spiritual and a mental growth. Spiritual and a mental growth. So these little words of wisdom, we didn't have the capacity to paraphrase a big book or even get any intellectual approach or understanding. And if we did, we'd get the program in our mind and it'd get out of our heart. And anytime you get this program in your mind and get it out of your heart, you're getting into trouble. So many of these things were basically the basic formation of which we would formulate them. Now, nobody knew anything about alcoholism, and I don't know how alcoholism can be described today. Talking about Eugene, he come back from Arkansas with a good story, and everybody gets it. Well, when I hear one, I get it, and then I keep on telling it. I talk more than they do, and so everybody thinks it's mine. But Gene's here, and you got to be honest. But alcoholism is kind of like Gene's story of this expert in chicken raising. And it seemed this man was talking to a group of chicken growers at one time. And he was up there and he said, now the best way to get the best results out of your birds is to separate your male chicks from your female chicks when they're one day old. Well, up goes a hand. How do you know the difference between a male chick and a female chick? It is very simple. You get you a box of worms, and the male chick will eat the male worms, the female chick will eat the female worms. So up goes another hand. How do you tell the difference between a male worm and a female worm? He says, lady, I'm not an expert on worms. I'm an expert on chickens. So when I get up here and try to talk about alcoholism, I guess I could make just about as much sense. So here we find many, many factors here that kind of leads us on, and we make like it. We know a whole lot about these things, but we don't know too much about any of them. So as we kind of progressed and grew here, and then we come to the Al-Anon, and the Al-Anon group here, this is my love. I wish I could just spend about 15 minutes and tell in that little book, One Day at a Time, and Al-Anon there, I think, is one of the most powerful things that I've ever read. And so here we have the help of our loved ones in here. And so this is a formation. This is a formation of which we grow. Many times we make an awful lot of mistakes, and those things go along there. But the word alcoholic, I think, is one of the most complex and paradoxical words that we come in contact with. I don't know whether the word alcoholic today is any more popular than it was back in when I came in. But it's kind of a repulsive word. And so I didn't like it. I didn't know what it was. I got smart about after I'd been sober a little while, and I went back to Doc, and I said, Doc, I don't know whether I'm an alcoholic or not. He said, well, I don't either. But I'll tell you one thing. You're either an alcoholic or a drunk or a mental case. Well, that didn't give me too much decisions in there, you know. I was kind of like this old boy that went to this factory, and he started working there, and they put this insurance policy in there, and everybody signed it except him, and he just wouldn't sign it. Boss tried to get him to sign it, the superintendent, and finally the president flew in there and said, you get that man in here that's holding up this insurance policy. So he got him in there, and he said, now you take your pen and sign this to get your tools and get out. So he just got his pen, went ahead and signed it. He said, now why in the hell didn't you sign that 2 weeks ago? He said, well, nobody ever explained it to me like this. So nobody ever explained to me what an alcoholic was. Now, I didn't know what an alcoholic was, still don't. But I had to be one to belong to AA, and nobody else would have me. And I wanted to belong to AA, so I become a me-too alcoholic. Every time everybody get up and say my name so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic, I say me too. Now, this is what the big book says. The big book says by often repeating these acts, they become habitual and then become natural. So it's just as natural for me to be an alcoholic as it is to breathe. So here one of the great problems of life was settled real early in my days as far as the word alcoholic was concerned. So then we get to the program of AA. And we get the program all mixed up. Getting mixed up with getting good when we want to get well. It's all right to get good if you want to get good. But I'll tell you what, if you stay on this program, it'll make you a hell of a lot better than you want to be. I'll guarantee you that. So here we get it all mixed up with getting good. And what the program of AA is to get well. It's to get well. Like Ellen story down in Beaumont, I mean Port Arthur down there, was an old boy that worked for the railroad. He got fired for the Rule G, and so AA's got a hold of him, sobered him up, and got him back in AA and got his job back. He liked to ride on trains, so after 30 days and the first payday, he got him a pass from Houston out to El Paso, and he was just living it up. This first time he'd ever been on a train sober, and oh, this was a beautiful experience. Had him a Pullman and everything. Came nighttime, and he prepared himself to go to bed and went back to his berth and pulled open the curtain. Here are two of the best-looking women you ever saw in all your life. Well, he was deeply embarrassed. He scratched his head, and he said, now listen, girls. I joined Alcoholic Anonymous. I'm trying to live a decent and an upright life.
Now, one of you girls got to find another place to sleep. So, you see, we just want to be
I started to say we wanted to be our normal selves, but I don't like to use the word normal since old Doc Miller told me what a normal person was. Said a normal person is a man that'll buy his little boy a whistle and then slap the hell out of him for blowing it. So I don't know whether I want to be normal or not. So here we find all of these things here as they kind of coordinate themselves and tie in. And then you come to my pet subject, the big book. I don't know why people won't read the big book. We'll read Fosdick, we'll read Emmett Fox, we'll do anything that we can read that we think another drunk hasn't read so we can be smarter than he is. But we won't read the big book. Yet the big book tells us how we can get sober and stay sober. It tells us who God is and how we can place him into our lives. It gives us a clear understanding of what spirituality is and how we can associate our movements and our thoughts with those. It tells about our relationships to God. It tells about our relationships to life. It tells what an alcoholic is and what alcoholism. But we won't read it. And then if you'll find, I think Jack was praying last night to page 83. At the bottom of page 83 and the top of 84, there are the most beautiful words that I have ever read in all of my life. And they are the most beautiful words that you will ever read if you will put your efforts and time to do it. They are the 14 promises of Alcoholics Anonymous. I won't recite all of them, but the first one says that we will have new freedom and new happiness. We will have new freedom and new happiness. The 14th down there said we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And so our big book comes vitally important in this stair step of life here. It is our regulation. It is our blueprint. It is our procedure, which has been the applications and the experiences of those first 100 men that have gone through these things and laid out a procedure that you and I might follow. Yet we won't read it. Like the little boy that went to his daddy and says, "Daddy, I want to ask you a question." He says, "Go ask your mother." He says, "I don't want to know that much about it." So we get sober and we're pretty well satisfied. So many of these things in building up here. Now, I don't know whether it was, I know it wasn't the jobs that I had lost or the jams that I had gotten in or these hilarious experiences that I went through. My drinking experience was about the same of all. But it was hurting people when I didn't want to hurt them. It was lying when I didn't want to lie. It was trying to justify myself when I knew my justifications were just as phony as I was, and they weren't accepted anymore by them than they were by me. And it was then when I said, and it was these things here, this feeling on the inside, that created the only idea, the first idea that I'd ever approached them to stop drinking. And I said, if alcohol is doing this to me, then I'll stop. And then I came to the greatest disappointment in my whole life. I found out that I couldn't stop. And here I was, and here's where my drinking pattern changed. It changed. I was no longer taking to drink to get drunk. I was taking to drink now to sober up, to write my name, to walk, to talk, to try to present myself, and take care of the responsibilities that I knew that was accepted upon me. And alcohol become my crutch. And I took it as a kind of a medication. And as I followed along this procedure here, the progressiveness seemed to go down and down and down. And many times I would take more than I anticipated taking, and I'd find myself again in an intoxicated condition. And I didn't want to be in that intoxicated condition, and I didn't want to go home and see that disappointment on Florence's face, and neither did I want to go and see it on our mother's face of whom we were living. And I sat out on the bank there many a night there and watched that little light in the window and waiting till 10:30, 11, 12, or 1 o'clock and waiting for it to go out. Then waiting another 30 minutes and hoping that Florence might be asleep. then slipping in and undressing and falling into bed and probably dropping off to sleep, but invariably waking up and hearing those little tears on that pillow next to mine. And me lying there with all the stiffness that I could rake and scrape in this old body of mine for fear that she might know that I was awake and listening to her crying. Saying over and over to myself, my God, why can't I quit? Why can't I quit? Certainly here was all the determination, all the eagerness, all the willingness, everything that I could rake and scrape in this old body of mine never to touch another drop. Only to wake up in the morning and do the same thing over again. As I walked into my father's business one morning, and he took one look at me and picked up the telephone and he called the bootlegger and he says, "You're killing me and you're killing my boy." And he put his head down on his elbows and he cried like a baby. And me standing there with the love and affection that I had for this grand person and knowing the heartaches that I'd caused him, saying this same thing over and over again, my God, why can't I quit? Why can't I quit? Certainly here was that same determination, that same eagerness, that same willingness never to touch another drop. But within myself, I knew I couldn't stop, and there wasn't but one thing for me to do, and that was to go out and grab that bottle and drink myself into hell and into blackness to where I could get it out of my mind. So you can see how grateful I am here today when Alcoholic Anonymous came to me and said, "You're sick, and you're not sorry." And my sponsor told me the thing that saved my life and the one that saved yours and the message of which we can carry to the world today. Because he said, from this moment on, it will not be necessary for you to ever take another drink as long as you live. And I can tell you how. And I can tell you how. And this was the first little ray of hope. Now, this didn't come through any group of coincidence. There are many, many things as we look back that we do not understand. But the longer we stay sober and the more responsibility that we get and the more grateful we are to this power greater than ourselves where our sobriety and happiness and joy seems to come. And then we can look back and somewhere along the line somebody is stair-stepped in our life all the way up here just waiting for us. And old Bruce Mathis said, you know, it's the funniest thing about an alcoholic is he don't fall down the steps, he falls up. And I never thought about it. We always stumble out. We come out in a better shape and eventually than any situation that we could have ever created. So here many, many factors were coming along then. So here I was, a physical condition, about 120 pounds, the eyesore to every friend that I'd ever accumulated. And everybody had given up on me and taking drinks. I'd eyesore to all of my friends. Only Florence and my dad was looking out after me to see that I didn't get hurt any more than possible. I was as far away from God and man as it was humanly possible to be. But this wasn't what I started out in life to be. And this wasn't where I wanted to be, but this is where I found myself on February the 21st, 1947. And this is where 8 million individuals in our nation today is finding themselves this very moment. And the only hope and the only hope that they have is for us to return this love and concern and goodness that other people gave us, that we can go and seek them out, that they might have the happiness here. I'm going to talk a little bit about giving today because this is the most powerful thing. This AA way of life is the most normal way to live that I've ever known. I'm perfectly contented and satisfied that there's not a man or woman in this group here today that doesn't know what God's will is for him or her. This is no new something of which we can go to and seek something. Old boy told me the other night, he says, "I'm trying to find God." And I said, "What would you do with him if you were to find him?" So, you know, we look for these things here, and here they seem to be because we get sick on the inside, and this is where it is. So here as we find ourselves seeking these things, many, many little things come in as we look back and take an inventory at that 14th promise down there that God is doing for something for us that we could not do for ourselves. But God doesn't come in and say, "I'm going to give you sobriety." God doesn't come in and say, "I'm going to give you happiness." But he says, I'm going to give you tools that you might use, that you might continue to maintain sobriety into your life. And I'm going to give you tools that you can take and use and create comfort and happiness in these things of which we want. So here the partnership comes into play. And this was the first thing that we read in our big book as far as the purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous is concerned. And early in the big book, it says the simple purpose of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is to show us what we can do when we enlist the aid of a power greater than ourselves. The simple purpose of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is to show us what we can do when we enlist the aid of a power greater than ourselves. And in the latter part of the big book, it gives another purpose down there, and he says the purpose of AA is to fit ourselves for service. For God and man. So here our big book gives us the tool to which we can get well with, and it gives us a purpose in life. So as I sat there in Mother's living room on February the 22nd, 1947, and I'd given up on life a long time ago, there was no plausible explanation I could give for my condition and situation that surrounded me at that moment. There was no individual, or there was nothing in my wildest imagination that would let me create in my mind something that I could take hold of and go back into the world of which I had once known. And I had not, I don't know whether I surrendered. There wasn't anything to surrender. But there was something there, and I had to cry out to the only person, the only God that I knew, whether it was my God or whether it was one that my father had told me about, or my father's God, or one that I heard about in church. But I said, God, I'll do anything if you'll help me get sober and stay sober. And he heard me. And in 45 minutes there, about that time, there was a man knocked on Mother's door. She and Dad were down at the store, and he said, my name's Doc Black, and I'm from Palestine, Texas, and I'm an alcoholic. I understand you've had a little trouble with your drinking. Would you like to get well? Would you like to get well? There was something magnetic about this individual. I've been asked this question many, many times, but there was something that drew me to this person. I could only repeat the words of which I did, and I said, yes, sir, I sure do. And he says, come out here on the porch and we'll talk some more. And we went out and sat down in the swing. And Doc began telling me a lot about his life. And I heard individuals, he wasn't telling me anything I didn't know because he was describing my life.